The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Thursday, July 19th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker, market analyst for ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, the House Agriculture Committee has put forward a new Farm Bill revenue-based safety net program. Also, the U.S. is turning thumbs down on the latest WTO Doha Round plan, calling for further reductions in farm subsidies. And the president has signed an executive order creating a panel to examine U.S. food safety. We'll have details of these and other stories. Also this half hour, a farm commentary and the latest agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. September wheat, 606 and three quarters, up three quarters. December, 621 and a half, up one. At the Chicago Board of Trade, September wheat, 321 and a quarter, down five and three quarters. December, 336 and a quarter, down six and a quarter. March, 351 and three quarters, down five and three quarters. December of 2008, 390, down one and a half. August beans, 856, up 4 and 3 quarters. September, 864 and 3 quarters, up 4 and 3 quarters. November, 882, up 5 and a half. November 2008, 911 and a half, up 10. August soybean meal, 227.50, up 90. August soybean oil, 37.63, up 13. At the Merck, August live cattle, 90.82 and a half, down 55. August feeders, 115.45, up 5. August lean hogs, 73.60, down 25 on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker, market analyst for ADM Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I want to start in the wheat market because we seem to have a reversal to the downside back into that diamond formation that we were discussing this morning.
Yeah, we do. I don't know. We'll have to see how much downside follow-through that'll generate here in overnight trade and what'll happen here probably at the end of the week. But it does indicate that we did try to make a break to the upside. That has failed, and now we close down back down underneath that. So one has to be a little cautious, at least from a technical perspective. I assume a lot of the weakness that we saw was probably spillover weakness from the corn market was enough to kind of pull it down here as we went into the close.
In the soybeans, a real taffy pulled back and forth across the unchanged line today, ended up to the positive side by 4 to 5 cents. And I wonder if some of that was week-longs getting out of the market, and I wonder what other factors might be involved.
Well, I think the if you look at the open interest levels, as we did here before we went on the air, open interest now is kind of back to where it was a week ago Monday before we saw a lot of new buying come in based upon the hot and dry weather that was forecast for this week last week. It looks like that's pretty well been liquidated out, so the market might now be in position here to maybe stabilize a little bit. When you look at the soybean chart, no major uptrend lines have really been violated. We're trying to hold in here. We probably still need a day or two to consolidate and kind of put the market in a little solid footing if we're going to try any kind of recovery attempt.
essentially we're in a 50% retracement move from the April lows to the July contract highs, basis the November 2007 soybeans. If we get weather, good weather, rainy weather, what is the potential downside here?
Well, there's downside. I mean, anytime you, I suppose you have to initially think that if we get some real good rains here toward the end of July, first part of August, which is the key soybean month, you look at the chart and you could see a 50-cent decline probably potential in the soybeans fairly quickly if the fundamentals, you know, would fall in place here to allow that to happen. But I think the market will continue to worry about possibly maybe smaller acreages yet to come in the soybean complex. And, of course, the underlying function of soybeans is to stay strong or at least encourage South Americans to plant as many soybeans as they can plant this fall. And, of course, if they don't do it, then the function of the market would be to continue its strength maybe on into next winter, early spring, to try to pull acres maybe away from corn. And, of course, a lot of that will depend upon how big a corn crop we actually do raise here this year and what kind of carryover projections we have.
And certainly weather concerns in the soybean pit of the utmost concern, especially U.S. But if you look at world the world pictures and world maps, it is awful dry, both in Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul as they're heading into their planting season. They are not fully charged yet. At some point, does this get on traders' radar?
I think it will, but it might. It's going to be a month or two. I think you'll maybe see some people talk about that. But I think we first got to finish raising the U.S. crop. We got to get it through the month of August, get comfortable with that, and then I think then the market will begin to maybe focus on South America. Now, your long-term weather people that look at the La Nina, El Nino cycle beginning to indicate that a La Nina is beginning to maybe take hold here. If that's the case, then you begin to see a little more dominant, drier type weather pattern in Brazil and Argentina for the winter months. And, of course, that'll be more of a, like, say, late fall, early winter type issue here for the trade to work and worry about, you know, whether or not South America has much of a chance of picking up the slack for our shortfall due to sharply reduced acres here this year.
Corn also had a reversal to the downside today, admittedly, though, a small one. But it also appears that the DEWS contract is really having a hard time holding its 336 July lows at the moment. What does this imply to you?
Well, what it implies is the trade is getting more and more comfortable with overall crop prospects. Overnight rainfall activity was pretty much what the doctor ordered. From the eastern half of Nebraska through Iowa into northern half of Illinois, northern half of Indiana, and on into Ohio. Now, there's parts of the Corn Belt that's probably come up short, primarily the southern tips of Illinois and Indiana. They look like they've come up short so far on this week's rain event. But I think the market is beginning to get comfortable with and starting to talk about maybe a national average yield well above what USDA has been using the last couple of months on their balance sheet, where they're somewhere around this 150. I think you're going to start hearing some crop scouts begin to talk about 153, 155, and maybe even some aggressive numbers a little higher than that. But that'll be what the trade's going to sort out, I think, here over the next couple of weeks as we approach this August crop report. Will be private estimates my guess is that some of these private estimates could be a little high because at least the Crop Scout reports the trade has heard here over the past month has kind of indicated that we do have a very high population on this corn acreage, and if we do, then that kind of indicates that we could have a pretty big yield on that August crop report, and that would indicate at least growing in these stocks inventories, and that just dampers price recoveries at that point.
can't help but notice that in the last several sessions that additional amounts of carry are being added to the spread structure, and that's usually not friendly.
No, that's telling the market that we're getting that we do have an adequate supply. The market is going to start anticipating what are we going to do with this big crop coming at us. There's a lot of concern because we just don't have the logistics and the facilities and the storage, the transportation to handle a corn crop of 13.5 or 14 billion bushels. And then you look at our large carry-in levels of soybeans and corn. You add those together. We've got a lot of bushels of grain out here. So the trade is beginning to get anxious and worried about this funneling effect of a rapid harvest, what it could do to the system with wide basis levels and just kind of plug everything up. So the market is already, I think, beginning to anticipate and going to encourage people to store their grain. And by doing that, it'll start offering carrying charges in the market to try to keep some of this grain from coming to market or try to postpone it until a later delivery date.
Any last advice that you might have for producers in this, say, over the next few weeks?
Well, a lot of the advice would probably depend upon where they're at sold. I think these kind of price levels, a lot of guys did get some numbers sold. I can only add that my cyclical work on corn and soybeans, while it's not going to be straight down, my cyclical work would indicate that the market is going to drift in here and decline maybe as we go into that August crop report. So someone would probably need to get something sold, either finish up some old crop sales or maybe get started on some new sales. If you don't have any sales on the books that's going to be delivered this fall, one might want to take a look at rallies over the next week or so to maybe put some of that on the books.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker, market analyst for ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Here's a quick reminder that you can receive the closing market report as well as the pre-opening market report, the opening market report, and commodity report via podcast. It's as simple as going to WILLAG.org, clicking on the right link in the navigation window, the red podcast link, and following the simple instructions. You'll never miss a broadcast again, and you'll have that information when you need. Go to WILLAG.org and click the link in the right navigation window called Podcast. In agricultural news, the House Agriculture Committee has adopted a 2007 Farm Bill proposal that would allow producers to choose between using the current counter-cyclical program or a new revenue assurance counter-cyclical program. The new program is based on one crafted by USDA. It would create a national per-acre target for corn, soybeans, wheat, barley, sorghum, oats, upland, cotton, rice, peanuts, and select oilseeds. These commodities would also have a national payment yield. The national payment rate would be the difference between the target per-acre revenue for the commodity and the national actual revenue per acre. Producers choosing to switch to the new program would be locked into it for the life of the Farm Bill. The plan is expected to assist producers when prices are high but yield is low. Other measures that passed in the House Ag Committee included a new payment limit on direct and countercyclical programs of $125,000 and of the three-entity rule and exclusion from farm subsidies when adjusted gross income is greater than $1 million. Producers with AGIs between $500,000 and $1 million would be eligible for subsidies only if 67% or more of their income comes from farming investments. Some lawmakers say that still is not enough. North Dakota Democrat Earl Pomeroy.
And so I do acknowledge that this is meaningful reform, but for those that think that they're feeling bad about how far this went, I'm feeling a little bad it didn't go further.
The 2007 House version of the Farm Bill also contains a measure that would set up a 10,000-acre pilot program in Indiana, allowing soybean growers to plant tomatoes on base acres that are tied to commodity programs. Some lawmakers wanted the pilot program for their states as well, including Tim Walberg of Michigan.
While the pilot program and the chairman's markup may be beneficial for producers and processors in one state, that being Indiana, it will likely cause issues with producers who heretofore have grown tomatoes outside of Indiana but supplied tomatoes to plants in Indiana.
Also in the House version of the Farm Bill, a measure that would prohibit USDA from issuing checks less than $25. Texas Republican Michael Conaway first called for a $100 threshold.
We got some information this morning that it costs USDA almost $15 to write each check that they write. And what this amendment would do would be to raise the de minimis level for checks written to the to producers from the current level of $10, which means we spend $15 to write a $10 check.
Conaway lowered the minimum check level to $25 after some members complained ending $100 payments would hurt many small producers. The House Ag Committee continues work today on the Farm Bill. The Bush administration says slashing farm subsidies to $13 billion is an unacceptable compromise in world trade discussions. Tuesday, lead WTO negotiators put forward a 45-page draft paper that would cut trade-distorting farm subsidies in the U.S. to between $13 and $16.4 billion a year. Bush administration officials say $13 billion would give producers no margin for error. The WTO draft also calls for the European Union to cut its highest tariffs on farm imports by 73%. The EU's original offer was 60%. Crawford Faulkner of New Zealand chairs the Agriculture Negotiations Panel for the Doha Round.
This is the next stage in our process, which represents, I think, as best I can put it, the range that is now seriously in front of us. Serious people would now try to get down to serious negotiations to close off what I have picked, rightly or wrongly, as where the point of decision is on the various issues. Their job is now to negotiate seriously in those ranges. In my view, if they choose to go outside those ranges, they're entitled to do so. My best guess is if they do that, they don't want a deal or they won't get a deal.
Advocates for developing countries say the latest WTO draft treats the U.S. and EU with kid gloves, failing to press the U.S. and EU hard enough to cut farm subsidies and tariffs. President Bush yesterday created a government panel to recommend steps to guarantee the safety of food and other products shipped into the U.S. and ways to improve U.S. inspections. The panel is chaired by Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt. The Food and Drug Administration has come under fire from Congress and others in the wake of a string of cases of foodborne illness, as well as concerns over drug-laced pet food and feed. Meanwhile, teams of U.S. and Chinese food safety officials will meet at the end of the month in Beijing to discuss the safety of Chinese seafood exports. The FDA has put a temporary ban on Chinese catfish, shrimp, and eel. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. In this week's Farm Bureau commentary, Amy Roachkiss says corn is not the culprit in the higher price for food.
The price of food is going up, not by much, but enough to get noticed. Food prices are up about 4% over a year ago, higher than the overall inflation rate. Americans are used to affordable food, so a price increase of only a few cents brings questions about who is to blame. It didn't take long for the news media to start running stories about how ethanol production is driving up the cost of corn, and by extension, everything from milk and meat to colas and cornflakes. The price of corn may be going up because of ethanol, but food prices are not going up because of corn. We all know that energy costs have skyrocketed. That is much or greater impact on food costs, because it takes energy to produce, process, package, and ship nearly everything we eat. Corn, however, is only one segment of the food market. Ethanol is getting a bad rap because people aren't looking at all the other factors that are involved in food prices. There is little evidence that any food category has been affected significantly by higher corn prices. Of course, nobody outside of agriculture complained when corn farmers were getting by on less than $2 a bushel. Now that they can get about twice that, thanks to ethanol, they are practically being blamed for taking milk from babies. That's unfair, especially since no one has been able to show a specific connection between ethanol demand and food prices. The negative attention this food versus fuel debate brings to ethanol is unfortunate. Since the growing use of ethanol is a good thing for our country, it reduces our dependence on foreign oil, and it's better for our environment. And rising crop prices are good for rural America. This is Amy Roachkiss with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Roachkiss's comments are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station. If you would like to submit an agricultural commentary, call us at 217-333-0850 or email us at willagstaff@uiuc.edu.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
A severe thunderstorm watch in effect for southeastern Indiana until 9 o'clock Eastern time tonight. Tonight in the north, clear to partly cloudy in central sections, mostly cloudy with a chance for a few lingering showers this evening. In the south, cloudy with showers and thunderstorms, lows from 50 to 66 degrees. Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I have just one or two quick questions for you, which may not have quick answers, and that would be okay. As the break we're seeing happening at futures in both corn and beans is going on, what are your anticipations for the basis side of this market, particularly at harvest time?
Well, I think you could make an argument either way, but I guess I would anticipate that, bottom line, I don't think, let's look at corn first. I don't think the possibility of any basis improvement would be very good at all at this point, especially regionally here. So I think that, myself, you can't take the risk of going into harvest with, for example, HTAs or something where you have your bases unpriced. I think if you have bushels out there sold, you need to have the bases set on it at this point, because it may get better. That's possible, but I don't think the risk versus the reward is worth it. On the soybeans, I would expect, you know, we've had this poor bases all summer. I would expect that to continue. We could see some improvement as you get to the end of the summer and maybe see some tightness, but I just don't anticipate any kind of improvement in the bean bases to normal levels again until we get out of harvest anyhow.
A lot more corn than beans are being grown this summer. What do I store?
Well, I think the market actually is, as Dan was talking about a little bit earlier, is really showing that you should store both, which is kind of an unusual situation. I know Todd had talked to Daryl some about that last week on Commodity Week. There's carry in the market in both. There's more dollars per bushel to be had there by storing beans than corn. But, you know, that really depends on your situation and, you know, how much space you have. You got to be able to get your logistics to work this fall.
Your prices today, sir?
Cash corn $2.94, fall $3.01, beans $7.80, fall $8.06.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Health experts are closely watching for signs of any more cases of bacterial meningitis in Vermilion County. Yesterday, tests confirmed that a 3-year-old girl died of the contagious disease nearly 2 weeks ago, and a second case was confirmed in another child under the age of 4 as well. Vermilion County Health Department officials say that child is currently hospitalized. County Health Administrator Steve Laker says a third case, any third case, may lead to an inoculation program, but investigators have not yet found a link between the two confirmed meningitis cases. The two children lived 7 to 8 miles from each other. Federal health officials are warning consumers to throw away certain cans of hot dog chili sauce after 4 cases of botulism, including 2 in Indiana. Those are the first cases of botulism in commercially canned foods in decades. The victims, 2 each in Texas and Indiana, were seriously ill but expected to survive. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley says increased pollution from the BP refinery in Whiting, Indiana, would hurt long-term efforts to clean up Lake Michigan. The refinery was given a permit by Indiana officials to increase pollution levels. Daley says the situation prompts concern because the city relies on Lake Michigan for drinking water, economic development, and recreation. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin is not expected to make an official announcement about his reelection plans until August, but in the meantime, the Illinois Democrats having no problem raising campaign cash. Durbin took in almost $2.5 million for the second quarter of this year, more money than any U.S. Senate candidate raised nationwide outside of personal sources. The $6 million that Durbin had in cash on hand on July 1st was just $5,000 behind another senator up for reelection, Democrat John Kerry. No well-known Republican has surfaced so far to challenge Durbin's expected reelection bid. State GOP spokesman Lance Trovert says, however, that Illinoisans have a healthy appetite for change. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I guess the question is, are we going to turn to hot weather across the Corn Belt in the next day or two and stay hot?
No, the answer is, at least for the eastern Corn Belt, as a matter of fact, with this front pushing southward, the system that gave all that rain across parts of the listening area earlier today, that system is pushing south, and it is a cold front, and we're going to see cool weather for the next few days. As a matter of fact, the temperatures through the weekend should not get out of the 80s on the maxes, and the minimum temperatures should be in the mid-50s. So those are hard to come by this time of year. Now, as far as heat is concerned, we are going to have fair weather from Saturday right through the end of the week, and temperatures will be on the rise during the latter half of next week, but they're still only just about get up to 90 degrees by the end of the week. So we're not looking at any heat from Illinois on eastward in the Corn Belt. Now, the western Corn Belt's a bit of a different situation because the core of the heat will be up over Montana, North Dakota, northern Wyoming, in that area, and some of that will spill eastward enough to get a piece of Iowa and Minnesota involved in Nebraska. So the western Corn Belt will see some high temperatures next week, but even out here we're not looking for anything very excessive. I think maybe mid-90s we'll see by the end of the week along the Missouri Valley and western Iowa.
Dry during the period we're talking about?
Yeah, that'll be next week towards, say, Tuesday to Friday of next week.
What about down in the Delta?
Down in the Delta, well, they still have this weather system that's gone through Illinois to come down in there, and they're going to see some wet weather, I think, over the next few days. The showers will be across most of Missouri and in southeastern Illinois tomorrow, while northern Illinois dries out, but then that'll push down into Arkansas and most of the Delta region on Friday, and then later Friday and Friday night down into the central Delta. So we're going to see some showers down there, and then the cool weather comes along. We don't see any heat for the southeast.
Thank you much, Peter.
Okay, my pleasure.
Peter Levitt, he's a meteorologist, and he joins us every Thursday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday morning at 11:30 Central Time for Commodity Week. And again, you can subscribe by podcast to the Closing Market Report. It's as easy as going to our website at WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.